Well, today on Grace to Stand, we are going to talk a little bit about our holiday memories. And by holiday, we're talking about Thanksgiving, Christmas season, New Year's, all of that. And we're going to just kind of reflect upon that in our own lives, but also talk about how we sort of live out this season that is supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year, but also could be really one of the most distressing and sometimes lonely and discouraging times of the year. When we're really, you know, to be looking to Christ and His incarnation and all of the comfort and joy that brings to us, sometimes we go through these seasons where they're particularly difficult and painful, and because we've experienced such great loss. So George and I are going to talk about that today. Thanks for joining us today on Grace to Stand. George, tell us just a little bit about some of your memories from Thanksgiving, Christmas, the holidays, this time of year, from your life.
Sure, yeah. So we are... It's busy, right? The holidays are busy, and that's why we didn't even record last week, coming off of our trip to Fan High or whatever that chemical is in turkeys. it's always amazing. The end of the year, just kind of October, mid-October to January 1st just flies by, you know? And, you know, there's Halloween, Thanksgiving, all the holidays for Christmas. So, you know, I'll say as a child, that was always our favorite time of year. And, you know, I think for most children it is. It's, you remember, you have those memories. And that's why I think between Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, the memories you have in school and with your families and as kids, they always kind of stick with you. So, I don't know. So I had a big family. So we were in South Florida. We have a big family. I only have a sister as far as my own immediate family, but we have a lot of cousins in the area. My dad's cousins in the area, my mom's, sister in the area, my grandparents. And so every holiday for the first 15 years of my life was always at the same person's house. So Thanksgiving was at my aunt, Claudette's house. My, Christmas was always at our house. New Year's was at my Uncle John's house. Easter was, I think that was back at our house too. So you just kind of remember those things. And then it's like, because it happens every, you know, a couple times in a row, if there's any deviation from that, you feel like it's not the holiday, you know, it's like you broke ranks with tradition. There's a lot of good stories with cousins. Yeah. It's a sweet time. Also for, I'm glad I went to good memories first, because also in the Sayor household growing up, it was also very stressful around Christmas because my parents ran a Hallmark store. So, I mean, we were, you know, we were Catholic. We would be working till late. I mean, my dad wouldn't lock the door until there wasn't a single person left. And then we'd be rushing to midnight mass. And so it was a stressful time. And then you'd get Christmas off, but the day after Christmas, they'd go back in because they'd have a big after Christmas sale. And so there was a lot of, stress. Our Christmas breaks were spent working. So it's interesting to think of the holidays. What was it like for you growing up?
Yeah. When I was really young, we used to have our extended family over for Thanksgiving at our house. And I remember, I mean, it was the one time of year that the fine china came out for Thanksgiving. Yes. Of course, it was not for us. That was for the aunts and uncles and grandparents and all that. My parents, but my mom would set the table at least a week ahead of time. I mean, the plates and the silverware would be on the table a week before Thanksgiving. Wow. Okay. And she would put a paper towel over the top of the plates so that dust would get on. Yes. That's just the kind of person she was, but you know, and or she is. But you know, and as we got older, it was, we'd go to maybe an aunt's or uncle's house or something to that effect for Thanksgiving. And it was just a good time to be with cousins. I mean, all of my cousins were girls, and so I was the only boy cousin, and it was just a good time to be with them. I mean, we lived at a distance from one another, not a huge distance, but we really saw each other mainly on holidays and so forth. Christmas was much the same. You know what? We would have Christmas morning at our house, my sister and I and my parents, and I, we would go in and we'd set the alarm clock in my parents' room at 5:30 in the morning or 6 in the morning sometimes. And, we'd do it where they wouldn't know it. So they would hear at 30 in the morning. Now they've already, I guess the older you get, the earlier you rise.
Right.
That was early then. So just, the opening of presents, my dad's parents would always be there on Christmas Day. And then we would leave and go to my mom's parents, after Christmas morning, and they lived over on the coast of California. That'd be with all my cousins. And, my grandparents had this artificial Christmas tree back before artificial Christmas trees were looked pretty much like real Christmas trees. I mean, this thing was this was like the most anorexic looking Christmas tree. I mean, yes. it couldn't have been more than 18 inches wide at the base. I mean, it was just, we distributed all the presents. It was just a good time to be with family. I mean, it was not particularly stressful because my parents didn't own a Hallmark store. That's a difficult time of year if you're in that business. But just the vacations and the weather getting cooler but now it's totally different because I live so far away from my extended family, so we don't get to see them too much. We see my wife's on the holidays now, but not mine as much. And now it's oriented around our children rather than being oriented around us. And so Christmas now and so forth is, they build toys now in such a way that you basically have to have a graduate degree in structural engineering to take the toy out of the box. So it's quite a chore. We do a lot of that.
I love it. So just even as you're sharing, it's bringing up all kinds of memories. You talked about the tree we used to get. Mm-hmm. So in Florida, we had a rare home that had these 15 foot or 20 foot vaulted ceilings. So my dad would get the largest. We didn't have a huge home. It wasn't like that, but just that's just the way it was in the family room. And so we would get 10, 11 foot tall trees. We prided ourselves on getting the tallest trees. And then of course that created all kinds of interesting dynamics getting, cause they didn't have SUVs back then. And,
it was Griswolds, strapping it to the top of the station wagon.
Yes. Right. And it's funny. It's every friend I have or cousin, their experience about buying the Christmas tree has very closely mirrored.
Right.
This ours where there's we don't want to call it fights. I don't know. There's stress that comes from getting the tree.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's why Seinfeld has the, did you watch Seinfeld? Are you Seinfeld?
Oh, fan? Festivus. Yeah.
Festivus. It's where does that, why did that episode resonate with so many people? Because there's all kinds of stress. The airing of grievances. Just make it an event. Cause it's going to happen.
Yes. I know.
But I love how, you talk about, my kids are young. Because at every phase of life, it kind of changes. When I was away at college, I was doing Thanksgiving at aunts and uncles' houses in New York. And now that I have my own kids, like you said, we have our own traditions. And I remember many Christmases staying up late watching something like It's a Wonderful Life or whatever, because that's what we used to watch when I was a kid. But building little tykes, Christmas houses or kitchen sets or whatever, late Christmas Eve, putting together whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So when the kids came out, you wanted that excitement.
Yes. Yes.
You wanted to see their face,
I remember, we used to put out cookies and milk for Santa Claus way after, into high school. Like, you know, and we wake up in the morning and, you know, there'd be crumbs on a plate and, you know, an empty cup. My parents would just do that sort of thing. It was just fun.
Oh, that's great. So, you know, it's obviously impressionable upon us, and, you know, we're smiling and laughing, good memories, you know. I do know not everybody has those kinds of memories, and not everybody's fortunate to live in those scenarios. I also know that, you know, I mean, there's people in our church who lost loved ones between last holiday season and this one. And so, you know, they've told me it's going to be hard. You know, there's an empty seat now at the at the table in the gatherings, and, and all those sort of triggers in our minds with smells or sounds or visual things that kind of bring back memories. It's going to be sort of empty for people. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's fair to ask you, but do you have any advice for people that aren't looking forward to the holidays, who may be in those situations?
I think I have a lot of advice for people who are not in those situations, but are around people that are in those situations.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
I think, you know, in the church in particular, we're the body of Christ. We're in union with one another. We're brothers and sisters in Christ. And, you know, there are people there who are, I mean, they've lost there's a dear couple in our church whose son, you know, like 20 years old, just suddenly in a tragic way, died back in the spring. This is going to be their first Christmas without him. I mean, like, I cannot imagine losing a child. My last living grandparent died back in August, and so my mom's mom is experiencing the first Christmas without any of her parents. I mean, they just sold the house that they lived in for 50 years. I mean, that's where we spent Christmases for many, many years. And so there's a loss there, but losing a child is a whole, I mean, it's one thing to lose your parent at the age of 95. It's another thing to lose your child at the age of 20. And, you know, there are people around us, you know, unless you live in a, you know, unless you're just sequestered from people, there are people that are hurting and lonely. And I think, you know, you really need to think about ways in which you can maybe break down the idol of your own nuclear family a little bit, and maybe even invite people who are lonely and struggling and have experienced great loss somehow into your life during the Christmas season. I mean, practicing hospitality, it's not like, you know, I don't know. I just really think that's something that we can do. And if you're, I guess the advice for people who are experiencing that, who are isolated, lonely, grieving this Christmas is to, you know, not do so alone, because when you're saved into Christ, you're saved into His people. You're not just saved as an individual into Christ with no meaningful connection. I mean, you're saved into a family of God, into His people. So have a measure of vulnerability and you know, lean on your brothers and sisters during this time.
I think people lean on Christ, right? I mean, and I know that because,
well, of course, yeah.
You know, like, so just in the last week, I had two congregants who lost family members in tragic situations, young. And they told me it was going to be hard. And these are two separate conversations, two separate people. And I just said, well, is there anything I can do? And they said, no. You know, I mean, what can you do? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, well, I'm praying for you. And, you know, I think they may not want to, for some, they may not want the attention. Others may need to be in another person's house. And I love what you said about breaking down the idol of the nuclear family. I think it's also breaking down the idol of your tradition.
Yeah.
Because that's what gets affected is, and that's really more and more. I'm not a humbug. We Christmas was a big thing in our home as I grew up, and it was it was exciting when my kids were young. But as a pastor, more and more, it grieves me how much tradition about what Christmas is. And when I say that like very, you know, very individualistically. This is what Christmas is to me. And how when that gets like upset, how it, you see how it becomes an idol, you know, people's ways of what types of things they're songs are supposed to be hearing, what types of decorations they're supposed to be seeing, what types of events they're supposed to be having. And it's like, man, when that's the tail wagging the dog. Like, I love that the holiday points our society toward the incarnation, whether they want to hear it or not, you know. The giving of gifts is a good thing. God has given us the greatest gift, you know, when for God so loved the world that he gave his only son in the incarnation of Jesus Christ. And so I love that. But the idea that this season has become a religious experience for so many people as a pastor bothers me. I want the joy there. I want the focus there. I want people to, you know, we have tons of events and parties at the church. I go to them. We love them, you know, but it also more and more, and again, as a pastor, I see how it reveals things in people's hearts that, you know, they're even in my own heart. I recognize, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, what is some of maybe as we're either if you have thoughts on what I just shared or if you have maybe can explain some of the reformed view of holidays or the season, you know, how do we view this in a Presbyterian sense?
Yeah, I think of, you know, the church calendar. And by that, I mean, you know, you think of things like Lent and Ash Wednesday and Good Friday and even Christmas and so forth. That was something that was really leaned into by the Roman Catholics and a lot of our Reformed forefathers spoke against the church calendar on the basis of the fact that we cannot have a bound conscience to follow any sort of arbitrary church calendar. Now, of course, these things in the church calendar are biblical, right? I mean, the Palm Sunday, that happened, and Good Friday, the day that Christ was crucified, and Easter, and Christmas, where we celebrate the incarnation, and all of that, those are certainly biblical events that we ought to commemorate as we explore Scripture. But to sort of be bound by a church calendar, I've kind of been disappointed that much of the Reformed world has really sort of embraced that as much as they have, because I think it kind of the holy day that there are no holy day. The holy day in Scripture is the Lord's day. There are 52 holy days out of the year that are the Lord's day. So there's nothing like that you can really bind people to in terms of some of these other days, even though there are actual events in Scripture. So I think that would be kind of the classically Reformed view, and a lot of people have argued against the following of the church calendars. The introduction of that is not Reformed. I mean, that comes from either a Roman Catholic or an Anglican view of things. But that certainly doesn't have a reformed tradition.
Right. Certainly, and that doesn't even get into some of the pagan roots of some of the traditions or holidays.
But, sure, sure.
You know, I think the important thing is, I just wish we were all as excited every Sunday morning as we are in December.
Right. We celebrate that Jesus has come every Lord's Day, and that he has lived and died and risen again every Lord's Day.
Every Sunday.
We don't need to have, I mean, I get the, I mean, I love the tradition. There's a Christmas tree on the other side of that wall. I mean, we celebrate Christmas, all that, that's fine. But like as the church, again, like kind of institutionally, I mean, it's not the hill I'm going to die on by any stretch, but it just doesn't seem to, you sort of prop certain things up at certain times that the consequence of that is that you can diminish the importance of the Lord's Day.
Well, right. And, you know, Kevin DeYoung wrote, I think he wrote an article on that where apparently a lot of churches are canceling.
Yeah.
They're canceling Lord's Day worship because it's falling on Christmas morning. I guess presumably they're having a Christmas Eve, maybe candlelight service, maybe they're not. But that's really where it shows up, is like we're given a day to worship. It's the Lord's Day, and to not worship on the Lord's Day because of Christmas, which is not, again, the Bible doesn't talk about.
Well, you'll get something like, you know, you'll get people who will who become very disenchanted and upset about, you know, maybe a church decides not to have a candlelight service this year because it's on Saturday and church is on Sunday, and so they'll get all upset about that. But then, you know, if you were to cancel the Sunday service because it happens to be on Christmas, they would become less upset by that. But the candlelight service is part of their tradition, and so that's what's important to them, is their personal family tradition more so than the Lord's Day. And I really, you know, I think that's backwards from a biblical perspective. I mean, I get the sensibilities of it, but
that what you just said hits close to home. You don't even know it, But yeah, none of this is to rain on the parade of the season.
No.
Again, we both love and celebrate Christmas. I actually love what they do in High Point, where they make High Point University. I don't know if they've done it since COVID, but have you ever been over there for their Christmas? Mm-hmm. They turn that whole university campus into a Christmas wonderland. Mm-hmm. You can't even drive in there. You have to take buses in there from the mall. We went our first year. I took the kids. It was amazing. It was a winter wonderland. It was freezing out. They had animals. They had, you know, like, but they had like snow, fake snow, and all kinds of things. And we enjoy the season. And I think it's okay to enjoy the season, even for things that aren't distinctively Christian. I think it's fine. It's fun. I think it's good for the kids. I think it's good for us because of the memories, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of my memories in life, when I'm a kid, like they start to dwindle away, but you remember those holiday things, you know?
Yeah.
And so we want that, but you know, it's like Jesus is the reason for the season. You see like that. And then there's the war on Christmas and all that. And it's like, but sometimes I wonder if Christians are the ones waging war on Christmas the most by not, by elevating what they think Christmas is over what it is, you know.
Right. I appreciate Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's because of it's just kind of a little bit of a different rhythm, and having a day to be with family or be with friends and understand that the reason why we have this day is it's Thanksgiving. It's a time to stop and pause and you know, give thanks. I mean, we ought to always be people who give thanks, but to have the opportunity to really take a day in the middle of what would otherwise be an ordinary work week and do that to give thanks to all that God is for us and has given to us to take that Christmas just stop and be especially thankful that Christ has come and that light has dawned and the new year. I mean, there's nothing like particularly Christian about that holiday other than the fact that, you know, it kind of causes us to stop and take stock of maybe the past year and maybe where we would want to go in the new year. I mean, New Year's resolutions, I usually break those by about, 10:30, 11 in the morning on New Year's, whatever they are. I mean, they're broken. But I mean, I think just to be able to stop and go, what kind of person do I want to be for the glory of God and for the love of my neighbor over the course of the next year? I mean, I think that those sort of things can be helpful in that regard. And to take that and make the most out of it and have joy in the midst of it.
I actually love that. I mean, I've always been a goal setting person. In the corporate world, we had performance reviews and work development plans, and they all kind of centered on the calendar year. And so I just brought that into our own life. And I wouldn't say I've done it every year, but quite often, like I've tried to use the drives because we're typically driving to Florida or back or something at some point around the new year, and just ask the kids what did they want to see happen and accomplish this past year, and what do they want to see happen and accomplish next year, and it really gives people a mindset of goal setting, which I think maybe we'll do around New Year's. We'll talk about goals.
Yeah.
But even then, again, it's like, I guess as humans, we need these things, these resets, these holidays, these focal points, you said, every Sunday we're celebrating the incarnation that God became man. Every Sunday we're celebrating the resurrection that Jesus walked out of the tomb. And yet when we have a time like this, where we just get to focus on that reality, that Christological principle that's so foundational to Christianity, it's beautiful, and I'm all for it. I just want to keep the focus where it's supposed to be. Like, what's really important about this?
Well, I'm with you there. I think that I think that the Lord's Day after Lord's Day is really where we need to be mindful of the birth, the life, the death, the resurrection of Christ, and the calendar of the church year is not something that we have this necessity to instill our whole church life around that whatsoever. But I think on an individual level, having the opportunity to stop and pause and consider these things and really give thanks to the Lord. These are all ways in which we can give thanks to the Lord for the grace that we do not deserve, the love of God that we do not deserve, for us to really consider, how do we love those within the church and outside of the church, but particularly our brothers and sisters who can think back upon their family traditions or think back upon just how they've celebrated or suffered during these holidays and really be there for them, to love them well, to hold their hand through a time where they might be experiencing. I mean, this might have been a joyful time with someone that relationship has either become fractured, divorced, or there's been death, and to love people through those times of loss and sadness, I think, is really
Sinful. Well, also like that, you know, people say this is the Christmas season. It's actually, if we were following a church calendar, this is not the Christmas season. That Christmas season starts with Christmas or Christmas mm-hmm. Eve. Mm-hmm. This is, if we're following the church calendar, it's Advent. And what does mm-hmm. Advent mean? But it means arrival or coming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's beautiful about that is that's, you know, that's what we are as Christians waiting mm-hmm. for. We are waiting yeah. for the coming of our King, uh-huh. you know, the arrival of the King. We're waiting for the exact same thing they were waiting for in that, you know, first century.
Yep, yep.
And every time before, it's like, when is the Messiah coming? Mm-hmm. When's he coming? Mm-hmm. And that's, and so he became man. He came mm-hmm. With a message of grace and mercy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's coming back. And that's what we as Christians are waiting for. And so I've always tried to point the focus there. It's like, it's a good, if we had that, like, why is it such a joyful time? Why is the shepherds and the magi and Simeon and Anna, and there's this excitement, you know? Because the King has come.
Mm-hmm.
The King is coming, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good reminder that this mm-hmm. time of year brings, and we as Christians ought mm-hmm. to use these opportunities to do that. And I would yep. say, Christians, use the opportunity to invite your friends to church. You know, we have postcards you can give out. We had our Christmas concert last mm-hmm. Sunday night, which was beautiful. It was heartwarming. It was touching. Mm-hmm. And we invited a lot of visitors. And that's, you know, like, that's a good thing about this. And so on the other side of things, if people think mm-hmm. I was a little dour or humbug or
yeah.
Scroogish or Grinchish, on the other hand, I'm not into this whole rain on the Christmas or Advent parade and you can't do anything. Everything in the culture is geared toward this. You want to talk about contextualization and evangelism and all that? Use it.
Mm-hmm.
Give gifts to your neighbors. Give mm-hmm. Give invites and information about church services. They mm-hmm. might come to church.
Yeah, right.
You know, they very well might. And so mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing. But yeah. ultimately, if it's pointing people to the fact, you know, we started John's Gospel here at Meadowview. We just finished a series and we just started with John. Actually, we started with John 20, but John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And that is an awesome thing to be focusing on. And so yeah. I guess that's my final thoughts, Darren.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to land it. And George, good words, and thanks for being on again today, and thanks for joining us. We can't wait to be back next time, and look forward to seeing you on Grace to Stand.